Thank you, Madam Chair. Senate File 3029 is a fairly simple bill that allows the Department of Human Services to apply for federal funding for administrative duties that Advocating Change Together perform on behalf of Medicaid recipients.
Senator Berglund, do you want to move the division report?
Oh, yes, I will do that.
Do I re-vote? Senator Berglund moves that we accept the division report on 3029. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, nay. Motion prevails.
We have done this for other groups that provide services to disabled persons, and it would be a way to help them if we're able to claim administrative funding. It'd be a way to help them to stretch the dollars that they do get from the state since they've been reduced a little bit further.
Looks like there's no fiscal impact. Are there any questions? Any member in the committee? Okay.
Madam Chair, then I would move that Senate File 3029 be recommended to pass.
Heard the motion. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, nay. Motion prevails.
Thank you very much.
Senator Berglund. The next bill on the agenda, Senator Sharon.
Good morning.
Senator Sharon, just wait a minute. We'll have Senator Berglund move the division report.
So moved.
All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed, nay. Motion prevails. Senator Sharon.
Good morning. This is a bill that was before the committee before, was re-referred back to Health and Human Services budget, and now is in front of the committee again. It is a bill called PACE that provides funding to cover the administrative and actuarial costs to implement a PACE program, which is an all-inclusive care for the elderly. By transferring funds from the Community Services Development Grant, CSSD, in fiscal year 11 and 12.
Senator Sharon, do you have an amendment?
What division
or was that already
adopted? That's the division report.
Okay, thank you.
The division report. These funds from the Community Services Development Grant are used for administration and are eligible for federal dollars, about 40% of the overall costs that we're needing to do the actuarial work. And we had a verbal amendment adopted in the division, but we had some difficulty understanding it, so it was re-referred to Health and Human Services budget to be sure that the language was in keeping with our goal to keep the funding from the grant in its proper form, and to make certain that once the federal dollars were captured, that they would be returned to the Community Services Development Grant. That is essentially what the bill, what we are here in front of you, is to, again, have the committee consider this bill. And with that, I'll answer any questions.
Okay. Do we have the confusion then from last week? It's all straightened out?
I believe that it is.
Move the bill for Senator Sharon.
That answers that.
Any other questions?
Madam Chair, may I?
Senator Senjan.
I may not be understanding this completely, but I thought Senator Sharon and Senator Sharon, I thought you said that the match was 40-60 or 60-40, no matter which way you look at it. But then I look at 310, page 3, line 10, and going on. It seems like the process for approval is going forward irrespective of the federal money. Is that right? Based on those lines, or am I missing something?
Just not sure where he's looking. I can't.
Or am I not? I don't know, Senator Sharon, if you know where I am. Maybe I'm...
On 2998.
2998, okay. Page 3, line 10.
Senator Sinjum, that's the old language.
That's the old language, okay. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Senator Betzel.
Madam Chair, I noticed the division report, page 1, line 33. It says the commissioner shall inform the legislature by January 15, 2010. We usually say that the chairs and ranking minority members of the committees having jurisdiction over health care issues, something like that. Otherwise, the report just gets sent to the library and nobody sees it. So I'm just wondering if there's a way we could identify just who the commissioner is to be informing of the implementation funding.
Senator Sharon, who do you want the commissioner to inform?
To the chair of Senator Betzel, do you have some suggestions?
I suspect it's the chair and the ranking minority members of the legislative committees having jurisdiction over health care funding.
Okay. Everyone heard the motion? By Senator Betzel?
No, with direction of council to make
to
it
fix it. Right.
Yeah.
How's that sound?
I love those.
All right. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, nay. Motion prevails. Senator Roebling.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Senator Sharon, now it's my understanding that you're funding this by taking money from the community service development. And what did that fund? What program is getting money reduced?
Chair.
Senator Berglund.
We have a grant program that is, it's a small grant program in DHS to help start up funding for a maximum of a five-year period for long-term care, home and community-based projects to help fill in the gaps that counties might have in their continuum of long-term care services. And this bill is earmarking some of that money for the startup costs, the administrative costs of starting up a PACE program.
Madam Chair, if I can just add, Jennifer McNerney with Aging Services of Minnesota. Madam Chair, Senator Roebling, because it is a grant program, there are no current recipients who will be losing money. It is the money is being taken from the pot that remains from the RFP process has already been finished for this year, and so there will be no money taken from current grantees.
Yeah, thank you.
Okay, any other questions? Then Senator Berglund moves that Senate File 2998 it's not amended. As amended, be recommended to pass. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, nay. Motion prevails. That's right, I forgot to put that amendment on it. Senator Sharon, do you want to do your next bill?
Yes, thank you, Chair Pappas. This is Senate File 3073.
Division report?
Senator Berglund.
I'll move the division report.
All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, nay. Motion prevails.
Thank you. This is a bill that would require an annual report to the relevant legislative committees having jurisdiction over services to people with disabilities. It would report on state policies and goals for those services and would provide data and measurement to assess the extent to which these policies and goals are being met. The report would be made each January starting in 2012. This community counts process will promote those services that maximize the use of our tax dollars and maximize the inclusion of people with disabilities in our communities. And it would promote innovative solutions that create service systems that are sustainable and maintain the independence of people with disabilities. I would like to draw your attention to the fiscal note. I think you have a copy of it, page 3 of 14. There is a fiscal advisory in the fiscal note. And if you read that, you will see that if language is changed in the bill to indicate that the data to be collected is provided in an existing form, existing published information, rather than in reports, there would be no fiscal impact to the department. The division report, in the division report, that change has been made, and so there is no fiscal impact for this bill.
I'll move the bill.
Just a technical question. We only got four pages of a 14-page fiscal note.
Mr. Mossman?
Mr. Chairman and Member Senator Betzel, it was an effort, a judgment call on my part, to save some paper. If you look at the full fiscal note, which I have, none of the other agencies that are listed on this fiscal note have any cost impacts on the bill. Okay. It was only the Department of Human Services, which you can see on page 2, all of those costs carry forward. Okay. And that's where the fiscal advisory is referenced that Senator Sharon just mentioned that takes the cost off.
Thank you.
Madam Chair.
Mr. Watson.
Madam Chair, Senator Sharon, the language of the bill says that it's a report every year, a sort of a permanent requirement, but the bill doesn't propose that that section be codified. Any reason why it wouldn't be codified if it's going to be a permanent report?
Senator Sharon.
I would defer to the committee's advice on that. Should it be codified, do you think?
If it's going to be a permanent requirement, I think it ought to go somewhere in the statute. I don't know exactly where it should go. Perhaps we can get some advice. But
we'd have to seek legal counsel on it. I'm Steve Larson with the ARCA Minnesota, and I guess we'd go with whatever legal counsel would recommend and where that should be codified in.
If I might be authorized to just pick a section and put it in.
Okay. Good. Put it in.
Relevant section.
Yeah. You don't need to set it aside or anything. You can just do that. Okay. Then I think who made the Senator Berglund? Did you make the motion again? All right. Senator Berglund moves that Senate File 3073 as amended be recommended to pass. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, nay. Motion prevails.
Thank you very much.
Senator Prettner-Solin.
Senator Prettner-Solin on Senate File 2589. Senator Murphy moves adoption of the division report. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carries.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and committee members. Senate File 2589 has passed out of the Energy, Utilities, Technology, and Communications Committee, the Transportation Policy Committee, the Transportation Finance Division, and the Environment and Natural Resources Finance Division. The language has also passed on the Senate floor as an amendment to the OES technical bill, although this hasn't been signed into law at this time. In its current form, the bill is supported by the Public Utilities Commission, MnDOT, and CapEx 2020. This is a bill that attempts to balance the rights of property owners in the state of Minnesota with the need to have reliable electricity in the state. The CapEx 2020 lines are in different stages of permitting, but are moving forward to meet the energy needs of our state. As these lines are going through this process of applying for site permits, landowners have been raising concerns about some of the proposed routes, and eminent domain has become an issue. In response to these concerns, we have proposed Senate File 2589. We believe we need to do all that we can to minimize the taking of private land and maximize the use of publicly owned land that has already been condemned. This bill attempts to do just that by requiring that the PUC make findings that it has considered locating a transmission line on an existing high-voltage transmission route, as well as railroad and highway rights-of-way. Section 2 requires that the Commission and the Department of Transportation cooperate in implementing this policy. The bill was amended in the Transportation Finance Division. It is, as I said, supported by the Public Utilities Commission, MnDOT, and CapEx 2020, and these agencies have testified that they will not incur any additional costs from the bill. And I have Bob Cupid here from the PUC if there are any questions you'd like to ask.
Okay. Are there questions from committee members? Discussion? Sir Dill.
Yeah, Mr. Chairman, Senator Prettner-Solin, you identified some organizations that support the bill. Are there some organizations that still oppose it?
I have not heard, Mr. Chair and Senator Dill, I've not heard any opposition to this bill. The Transportation Division was at one time, but we have worked out the language so it's acceptable to them.
Mr. Chairman.
Sir Vickerman.
I'll move the bill. I have all those windmills in my area. I need to get the power someplace.
And Ms.
Sir Murphy.
And Mr. Chairman, this bill doesn't really go outside, too far outside of what's currently happening anyway. And it's best to have it down in black and white so everybody knows what the rules of the game are going on. And, you know, there was a little heartburn with the Transportation Committee at one time, but it's all been taken care of.
Okay. Do we have further discussion?
Little Malox is a good thing.
If not, Senator Vickerman has moved that Senate File 2589 as amended be recommended to pass. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed. Motion carries. Thank you,
Mr. Chair and committee members.
Okay, then we have next Senate File 2429, Senator Erickson Ropes.
Good morning, Mr. Chair and committee members. I'm looking to see if there's a representative from the Met Council here. This bill has been, excuse me, before the committee before, and had the fiscal note reevaluated, and that's why we're back again this morning. If you look at the fiscal note, this bill opens up free transit rides for veterans with service-connected disabilities. There had been language in past bills that said permanently disabled veterans, and we just this year removed the word permanent, so it's veterans with service-connected disabilities. The Met Council has testified before previous committees this year and before you the last time we met that they would be, if you look on page 7 of 8, if you have the 9-page fiscal note before you, at the bottom, it says the Met Council estimates it will not be any additional impact in the change in legislation, the current biennium. They'd gotten a rider in last year's legislation that put some money in for this purpose, and so that's my understanding of the fiscal note.
Yeah, let me just ask Mr. Mosman to make a couple of comments on that.
Thank you.
Mr. Chair and members, just relative to the fiscal note, the reason the bill is in finance is because if you look through the fiscal note, there are assumed small but some assumed revenue losses both for Greater Minnesota Transit Operating Systems and for the Metropolitan Transit Operating Systems. And those amounts are discussed on, if you look at page 6 of the fiscal note for Metropolitan Transit, and discussed on page 3 of the fiscal note for Greater Minnesota Transit. And that's what prompted the bill being here. Both of those agencies assume that those loss of revenues can be absorbed within the operations of the Metropolitan Transit Operations and Greater Minnesota Transit, which is why you see a zero on the front of the fiscal note. So that's the fiscal activity going on here.
And Senator Erickson Ropes, excuse me, looking at the language, obviously the changes to an existing statute, this is not a new program, but how does it, maybe Senator Murphy might know, how does it work? Would a disabled vet have some kind of a card from Veterans Affairs that they would have? Is that what they present then?
Yeah, Mr.
Mr. Murphy.
Mr. Chairman, on most of the time on your, well, all the time on your discharge papers, you have any lists of permanent injuries. It also has, you know, all the awards you win and or earn, I should say, and, you know, it's a pretty record of your service, but it has your service connected.
But those are the discharge papers themselves,
right, Mr. Chairman? So. And those are presented. And Met Council takes those. The Greater Minnesota Transit takes those. It's really not a big deal. The only reason this bill's here is that
As in football, when the officiating crew makes a bad call and then they go back and look at the replay and then they come back out and say, upon further review, we made a mistake. And they were impressed upon them that this really doesn't cost them any money. As a matter of fact, it probably buys them a lot of goodwill.
Yeah, Mr. Mossman made that clear. Yeah. But again, I was just wondering about the process if somebody.
Oh, no, the process is pretty simple. And most of the time, you're when you come back from or discharged, you go to your county veteran service officer, and they lay out all of your benefits, your benefit package coming to you, and this is one thing they talk about. Okay.
Mr.
Chair? Senator Betzel.
Mr. Chair, if you look at page 7, at the bottom, the second to the last paragraph, it says that the Veterans Administration issues identification cards that is provided to each disabled veteran, which would be used as an eligibility identification. So,
you're right.
Yes,
that's right.
Thanks for reading that to me. I had not caught that.
Don't we all read the fiscal notes?
Well, I was reading through
it. Oh, sure.
Just haven't gotten there yet.
Senator Higgins.
I was going to point out the same thing.
See, we all read the fiscal notes.
Is it time to move the bill then?
I don't know if there are further questions. Senator Higgins moves that Senate File 2429 be recommended to pass. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carries.
Mr. Chair,
thank you.
Committee members.
Okay, next we have Senate File 1770, Senator Youngbauer.
Mr. Chair, I'll move the division report.
Senator Betzel moves adoption of the division report. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carries. Senator Youngbauer.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. Senate File 1770 would create a ladder out of poverty task force. It continues the good work of the Poverty Commission that I was a member of, and actually focuses in on some different actions that the legislature would hopefully take and move and clear the way for citizens, communities, to be able to help folks create other ways to get out of poverty. We've worked over and over tirelessly on the fiscal note, and I guess due to the way the Senate's always operated, which is fine, we cannot get the fiscal note down to zero, so we've got it down to $2,000 a year. And that's why we're sitting before you. It's minimal. It's interesting that we've been able to find millions of dollars sitting in couches and under chairs, according to some the governor and some other folks around here, but I'm hoping we can somehow find a couple $1,000s a year to keep this do this ladder out of poverty task force and keep the good work of the Poverty Commission and people moving.
Well, a couple comments on the fiscal note. First of all, if you find those millions of dollars, let us know, because we could use them. We have had, I think, a couple of fiscal notes this year relative to legislative membership that have been limited to $2,000, and that's an expense that we're able to cover. So if that answers questions about the fiscal note for members and for Senator Youngbauer, the fiscal note's acceptable. I'm sorry, Senator Youngbauer, go.
No, that was pretty much it, Mr. Chair. I'm hoping that the committee will move the bill so that we can continue this work. I think it's important. I think we accomplished a lot of things in identifying different issues in terms of ways that the legislature could clear the way to help folks move out of poverty.
So how is this distinguished from the previous commission?
The previous commission, Mr. Chair and members, came out with a number of different recommendations. This focuses in on some certain things. I think you'll find that on, let's see, the lines, subdivision 2, line 2.3 down to 2.24 really talks about the kind of things that that this task force would focus in on, and those were parts of our recommendations based on the Poverty Commission. So we came out with a set of recommendations, and this would further refine and try to move towards some of implementation of some of those items.
And you were part of the previous.
Mr. Chair, members, I was part of the Poverty Commission, as well as Senator Roebling, Senator Dill.
I was.
Senator Pappas.
Oh.
All right. Thank you. Senator Anderson.
Mr. Chair, I was just reading the summary, which says that it sunsets in 2010, but I don't believe that. I think that's a typo. It looks like it sunsets in 2012.
Page 2, line 31.
Yes,
page 2, line 31. So I just want to clarify that that's correct. That 2012, it doesn't sunset this June.
Mr. Chair, members, my line 2.31 says June 1st of 2012.
Right, it's just on the summary that it has a different date. Right.
We read okay. The summaries, too.
Sir Roblin.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And yeah, the summary would be inaccurate. When it's appropriate, I'd like to move the bill.
Well, is there further discussion on the bill?
And Mr. Chair, goes to rules.
That would be correct.
Yeah. All right. If there's no further discussion, Senator Roblin moves that Senate file 1770 as amended be recommended to pass and re-referred to the Rules Committee. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
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 Opposed? Motion carries.
Thank you, Mr. Thank you, Chair, members.
All right. Next we have Senate file 2900, Senator Chaudhry. Senator Anderson moves adoption of the division report. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye. Aye.
And we're having the fiscal note distributed. Senator Chaudhry.
Mr. Chair, Senate File 2900 is the annual game and fish bill. It also includes environmental policy as well as the lands bill as well that has passed this body. The only portions of this bill that have not passed this committee and even the Senate floor are the actual game and fish provisions. Signature items of the game and fish bill are, number one, that the game and fish fund is somewhat stabilized under this bill, and at the same time we make fishing free for all kids for the first time in Minnesota, as well as creating a walk-in access program in Minnesota for the first time, which is something that wildlife hunting conservation groups have been pining for quite some time, and this is finally creates that. It also goes a ways towards curing the imbalance within the Game and Fish Fund, which has been reported on between wildlife and fisheries spending. We do that by increasing the contribution of anglers to the Game and Fish Fund, and also by creating the wildlife the walk-in access program and reducing youth hunting fees in this bill. So I think it's a I think we've done some really solid work on this. There's going to be a lot of things we do this session that we're going to be able to point to in future years that we really did some good things by making fishing free for all kids. And creating this walk-in access program. There are some other this also also has the repeal of the definitions in this bill as well. We do some things with invasive species in terms of penalties for transporting invasive species on boat trailers. We also for the first time, insert invasive species education into the boating certification certificate course, and then we also have we also address some of the baiting issues that have come up in hunting outside of the hunting within hunting areas only, not outside of hunting areas. We prohibit feeding of all wildlife beginning September 1st through December 31st if you're in a hunting area, except for bird feeders, et cetera. There's appropriate exceptions for that. We've had a big problem with baiting of deer that has been transmitting bovine tuberculosis. We've had to eliminate deer herds. We've had to eliminate livestock herds. And we just need to contain this spread somehow. It's not something that that we enjoy doing. In a vacuum, wildlife feeding is fun. We get to see it. It's educational. But particularly during hunting season where baiting becomes prolific, we have this overarching issue of spreading of disease that we have to contain. So that we are proposing some measures in that. What are the things that I forgot? Mr. Knopf can maybe go through, I don't know, go through the entire bill or...
Well, Mr. Knopf, is there anything you wish to add? Or?
Well, Mr. Chair, I think Senator Chaudhary has covered some of the major changes that are in here, including, I don't know if you mentioned specifically the increase in fishing license fees. I'm talking about the basically the imbalance in the Game and Fish Fund. There's also some temporary regulations for Cass Lake with spearing. There is a provision in here that for the payment in lieu of taxes for the Commissioner of Revenue to work with other individuals to try to come up with a plan for the for payment in lieu of taxes. So that's also in here. Otherwise, Article 3 is as it left this committee last week in Senator Anderson's bill. Article 2 is mostly the similar provisions except for the ones that Senator Chaudhary mentioned. And then Article 1 has all the game and fish law changes, which are a number of changes, including, as I said, the fishing license fee increase and the decrease for youth deer youth hunting licenses, and the decrease or the lack of licensing requirements for youth under age 18.
I had several questions about the fee increases, but first, where's the PILT provision?
Mr. Chair, it's in Article 2, and all it does is create a state.
What page? What page is that?
Mr. Chair, it's on page 56. It's section 35. Article 2, section 35.
It creates a stakeholder group during the interim review PILT. And I asked staff to just basically put in some boilerplate language in creating that, and I'm not wedded to any particular part of this language. If people have suggestions, it's fine with me. But I think this is aimed at getting people together to talk about this issue.
Okay. Senator Anderson, with all the PILT discussion we've had this year, it doesn't look like this language runs, excuse me. It doesn't look like the language runs afoul of the tax committee. I mean, with our jurisdictional fights over PILT. Have you reviewed the language?
I have, Mr. Chair. This was passed out of my division, and I think Senator Bach, he's on my division. I think he's aware of this language. I can't recall what his comments were.
Mr. Chair, I've actually discussed doing this with Senator Bach. He and I have had casual conversations about whether to put it in the tax bill or not. I inserted it in here and informed him about it. He was not in committee at the time where we passed the amendment, but if he's strenuous about carrying in a tax bill instead of here, that's fine with me. I just think we needed to get going on this. But I haven't heard from Senator Bach at all about any objections. And if he does, we can talk about that. That's fine.
And in Article 3 in the state land section on the next page, what about the language in terms of some of the market value issues? Does that send the bill to the tax committee?
Mr. Chair, this language is identical to what this committee as well as the Senate floor has passed. So it is of no change.
Okay, so we had this language is what, in Senator Anderson's earlier bill?
Right.
Okay, Senator Anderson, same question then. I didn't catch that before, but is that language that needs to go to the tax committee?
Well, Mr. Chair, as we mentioned, Senator Bach's a member of my division. We review this in my division. This is from the lands bill, and no one has asked for it from the tax committee. It really just establishes how the DNR is to appraise land.
Okay.
And set the values.
All right, then let me ask some questions relative to the fee increases in the bill. Fiscal note indicates an increase in the Game and Fish Fund of almost $1.4 million, I think $1.375. So is the primary increase the fishing fee that goes from wherever I found it? It's increased by $4?
Mr. Chair, yes, the fee would go up by $4 next year, not this year, but next year. And that provides some stability to the Game and Fish Fund for a little while, and then it calls for another bump of $4 in 2015.
Okay. And there are a variety of small increases, I note. Do we have a schedule of the fee increases presented to us? I don't think we do.
In the fiscal note. Chair, if you look on page, I just saw that on page, page five.
Five. Looks like it has some.
Look on six and seven. There's two different increases. So it shows the first one.
How are the fee increases determined? Why $4 versus $10?
Mr. Chair, it was a discussion of stakeholders. The proposal came from a variety of fishing groups that this would be something that would be a meaningful increase to the fund, but bearable by users.
Okay, but I mean, is there a connection between the increase in $4 and explicit financial needs? I mean, again, how was the $4 arrived at?
I wish we had the graph that we had in committee. There was an updated one. I don't know if it's been passed out or not.
Yeah, we have
that. Do you have that?
Yeah, we've got that. But okay.
Well, I mean, that graph indicates what's going on with the Game and Fish Fund. It is steadily decreasing and will the DNR projects it to go into the red by 2013. That was pre-forecast. Post-forecast, it may even be sooner. What this bill does, and I think conservatively, I think the fiscal note itself is very conservative. I think we will be stabilizing the Game and Fish Fund even more by this. But conservatively, we will be averting that, and then we'll be giving it an additional bump in 2015.
Mr.
Mueller understands your question better.
Mr. Chairman and members, I had a one-pager passed out and shows the cumulative effect of all the different changes in the bill and what it has on the fund balance of the Game and Fish Fund, namely their main operations account. And I took into account some of the other changes that we've already adopted in other legislation also, namely there was a $900,000 transfer in the original budget balancing bill that was taken out of the Game and Fish Fund. So I've accounted for that. And then you add the 1.4, or subtract out the 1.4 million of the walk-in program that is part of this bill, and then add the new fees. So in fiscal year 11, it's pretty much a wash in this bill. It's about a minus $25,000. But the real money, the new money's revenues start in 12 and 13, and that does, you'll see on the bottom, the Game and Fish Fund balance, the dashed line is what's in the February forecast, and then the solid line is the effect of this bill and other legislation. So there still is a gradual decrease in the fund balance, but what this doesn't include is when the fishing fees do go back up again in the bill in 2015, so then there'll be another bump in revenue if the fund balances start going down again. So it does stabilize the fund. There's about a $2 to $3 million imbalance of revenues and expenditures in the fund right now. So this helps undo that balance, but there still is a net imbalance of expenditures versus revenues in the fund. But this helps address that, at least on the short term.
Well, with the increase, the subsequent increase, would there be a possibility if there's increased usage of a need, an interim increase in between these two increases, or is it assumed that what's in the bill will stabilize the Game and Fish Fund?
Mr. Chairman, another thing I'll maybe add is the regression model that the DNR uses to assume these revenues assigns a loss of sales every time you increase the fees. And I've carried that money and that loss across all years, but I think what the DNR, or what's the some of the past increases have shown that eventually there is a bounce back in sales. So these revenues don't even have that built back into it. So I think there will be actually more revenues in between this, the initial $4 increase and the one in 2015. I think revenues will actually maybe go up a little bit as there's a bounce back from the first fee increase.
Okay. And a question that maybe has an obvious answer, but there are a lot of smaller fee increases in the bill. Was it felt that just kind of spreads the pain, or to do everything through fishing license increases would be a little bit too onerous? Mr. Knopf?
Mr. Chair, I think what you're, a couple of things. What you're also seeing are the other fee increases are proportional, especially for non-residents. There are different types of licenses that can be purchased, and so they're all basically proportional on a $4 increase on, the, on an individual license. Those are increased proportionally. And then there's also the one change that we didn't mention earlier and probably should be mentioned is on the issuing fee on page 21, section 43. There's a doubling of the issuing fee for game and fish licenses from $1 to $2 for the general licenses. And that's also included here. That's the license agents actually retain that fee. When the DNR sells the licenses, they also retain it to the game and fish fund. But generally, the that's retained by who's ever selling the license. So that's also in here. There are some changes in the duplicate and replacement licenses for firearm deers for those under 18, which is actually a reduction in the fee for those. So but basically what you'll see is most of the fees, except for those issuing fees, are all proportional to the $4 increase.
And, Senator Chaudhry, I think you indicated that the affected groups, or at least the representatives, were supportive of these fee increases?
Mr. Chair, they brought this bill to me.
Okay. Senator Roblin.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm wondering, what is the $4 loss of federal revenue?
Mr. Chairman and Senator Roebling, every time we get $4 of federal money for every fishing license sold, whether it be for any of the ranges. So we've built in, and that revenue goes right into the game and fish fund. So it's tracked as game and fish revenue. But every time, so some of these increases have built in loss of overall sales. So we had to subtract $4 for every fewer license sold. And that comes in a couple areas, both in the regression of fewer licenses sold when we increase the price, but there's also the provision in the bill that for where we raise the age of when people are required to have a fishing license. So there's about, I have it overall here. There's about 32,000 fewer fishing licenses sold for the raising of the fishing license up to 18, the requirement that people start buying fishing license when they're 18 instead of 16. So that's $4 per 32 for the 32 fewer licenses sold. And then we're also selling about 60, the regression has about 63,000 fewer licenses being sold because of we're increasing the price to the other residents and non-residents. So that's the loss of per $4.
Mr. Chair.
Sarah Roblin.
You know, instead of giving the licenses free to 16 and 17-year-olds, if we were to give them a half-price license, would we still lose the $4 from the federal government?
Yeah, we can always remove that. Mr. Chair, no. But what we're only losing $100,000 from the federal government, and what we're trying to do here is something that's much greater than $100,000. It is trying to get more young people into fishing and training future license purchasers. And I think that loss of $100,000 of federal funds is really well worth it for what we're accomplishing here for the first time. That's the idea.
Okay. Further questions?
Mr. Chair.
Senator Vickerman.
I'll move the bill because we've had hours of discussion about this already.
Mr. Chairman.
We have a technical amendment, too.
Senator Pampas.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Chaudhry, would you explain once again, I'm sorry I missed it, what the fee is for in the bill?
Mr. Chair,
how much the fees are?
Senator Pappas, currently an adult pays $17.50
plus the $1.
$17 plus a $1 issuance fee to the if you buy your say you're at a gas station, you'll pay $18 for a fishing license for an adult. Under this, you would pay $23. But if you have kids, you will be saving. You say you have one kid, you'll be saving $23 too. So you're actually saving a net of about $19 if you have kids, because you'll no longer have to purchase a license for your 16 or 17 year old.
Oh, it's just the 16 and 17 year olds.
Right. Those under 16 can already fish for free.
And what are you spending the money on them? What's it for?
Mr. Chair, Senator Pappas, the increase in license fee pays for the allowing 16 and 17 year olds to fish for free.
Mm-hmm.
And then it also, a good chunk of the increase is going one time towards the creation of the walk-in access program.
That's for hunters?
Yes.
So you're raising the fishing fee to help the hunters?
Mr. Chair, in a sense, yes, because we have another issue within the Game and Fish Fund, and that is an imbalance between fisheries and hunting. Currently, we are spending more of the Game and Fish Fund goes towards wildlife hunting activities. Less. As opposed to fishing. So hunters are currently subsidizing more of fishing. So this brings that balance into play a little bit, a little bit more equity. We're not looking for a hermetic seal between the two, but the trend has been increasingly such that the hunters have been subsidizing the fisheries activities. So this brings that into balance a bit more.
Senator Higgins.
Mr. Chair, Senator Chaudhry, I have two questions on page 54. One is about the prohibition on removing sunken logs. And I can remember when I have served on your committee in years past that we had what seemed like weeks of testimony on it. What's happened is just nobody doing it, and we've decided not to do it. And then my other question is on the non-game wildlife checkoff. You are removing the requirement that the LCMR approve the work program before the money is spent, and then looks like you're actually dedicating the funds for the checkoff for one specific wintering habitat. And if you could tell us a little bit more about that.
Senator Chaudhry.
Mr. Chair, Senator Higgins, yes, I'll have Senator Mr. Knopf explain them. These were all three were in the DNR technical bill, a policy bill, but I'll have Mr. Knopf go through the reasoning.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Higgins, the sunken logs provision on Section 32 is really just codifying a law change that was made in, I think it's 2001, if I remember right. When you were on the committee, you remember there was one year we allowed sunken log recovery, and then the next year we heard from so many people, so then you decided to disallow it. And so there was a provision saying that the commission could never issue a permit, and you'll also see the repeal. There's a whole quite a bit of language that was dealing with sunken logs that really wasn't effective anymore in the statutes because we don't allow it. And so what this does is codifies that prohibition and then repeals all the language dealing with sunken logs. So, and the non-game wildlife checkoff, this was brought to us by the agency. Senator Anderson may want to talk a little bit about the LCCMR. That was part of a compromise. They were not even going to have the reports. The agency didn't want to submit the reports anymore. So that was this is kind of a modified version of what the agency brought in. Basically, it strikes the language that says that it can't be expended unless the commission has approved the work program. And the other language you're talking about on 55.11 to 55.18, that's just allows them to use some of the funds for this purpose, for the neotropical migrant birds.
And Mr. Chair and Mr. Knopf, can you give me an example of a neotropical migrant bird? I'm struggling with that because I don't know enough about it.
Mr. Chairman.
What's one? Just one.
Warblers.
Warblers. Warblers. Mr. Chairman, Senator Higgins, warblers or tanagers?
Okay, thank you.
Senator Thomas, we on the birds or something else?
They don't have habitat now.
Deer.
Are you done with birds? I'm going to deer.
Going to deer.
Well, Mr. Chair, I did ask what was the difference between tropical migrant birds and neotropical, and I don't believe I ever got an answer.
Yes,
on
no, there
that.
Was an answer.
Color.
That was your answer.
You no, Mr. Chairman, Senator Anderson, the answer is that it's a new world. Tropical birds are considered old world, and neotropical are new world.
Very good. Thank you.
Can you define that?
Where is this?
I looked it up.
You know, I know we're getting really excited about these birds, but let's try to have one person at a time. So,
is it my turn?
If you can keep the excitement down. But you're going to deer, right?
I'm going to deer. Yeah.
Okay,
I'm done
Senator Thomas.
I'm done with neotropical. So. Mr. Chairman and Senator Chaudhry, I got a phone call during deer hunting season about deer baiting from somebody who had been arrested. And
nice friends.
Well, no, I didn't. The person that got arrested called me. And it was actually somebody from Senator Parasol's district that was hunting up in my district. And and they had an issue. They thought what they were doing was legal. And there was some kind of powder that they had purchased at one of the local stores that appeared to be something that could be used at the time. And in the fine print, there was the word corn. And so when the conservation officer saw this container and saw the word corn, he determined that this was illegal baiting, and it resulted in a ticket. Was there any attempt to clarify language and what can be used or not? Maybe this is the wrong bill. Maybe it's a different bill.
Mr. Chair, Senator Tomassoni, I think that's what this bill does is clarify that. Right now, I think there's room for interpretation. So we're making it very clear that you cannot feed wildlife in a hunting area where you would be able to hunt, or you cannot feed deer for the anything other than a bird feeder. You cannot feed wildlife in a hunting area during the hunting season when it begins September 1st to December 31st. This will nullify any misinterpretation.
Okay. Further questions on another species of animal or something else?
I wanted to go back to the sunken logs just because I've never heard the debate on it before, even though they said there was a lot in various committees. But how come we would not harvest sunken logs? Because isn't it a resource that would allow us not to cut down as many other trees? I guess I don't know how many are out there and why we wouldn't allow them to be brought back up.
Senator Higgins.
Mr. Chair and Senator Roebling, some of the sunken logs have huge value because they are very old logs that have been preserved in basically very cold water for a long time. And there were a couple of gentlemen who wanted to go harvest them all and make a cash killing on the whole deal. And they aren't logs that can be used like to build a house or anything. They're almost kind of petrified, but that's not the right word. But they are not something that you could just go use in the place of freshly cut down and milled wood. Did I get that about right, Mr. Knopf?
That wasn't quite the
I think Mr. Chairman would also to address Senator Roebling's question. What happened was the legislature authorized it 1 year, and we heard from so many people that had problems when they targeted these lakes that we had several evening hearings of packed hearing rooms just filled with people who had cabins on these lakes. So we're very concerned because what they're doing is they lift them up from the bottom, they stir up the bottom of the lake, so there was concern about all the activity that was going to be going on these lakes, and people were just really up in arms about it. So the legislature then the next year prohibited sunken log removal, and that prohibition has stayed since 2001. I remember several evening hearings when Senator Krenz was chairing the committee, and again, packed hearing rooms of cabin owners and homeowners on these lakes that were being targeted for sunken log recovery were just very upset about it and wanted that changed, and the legislature obliged and changed the law. So this disallowance, or this has been going since 2001, we have had this prohibition in law. It's just that this now just codifies it. That it doesn't change the law in any nature, but it makes sure we put it in the statute, and then it also repeals the statutes on the process for recovery of logs. This is really more of a technical change to the statutes right now. Since 2001, we've had this prohibition.
So I don't want to get too far afield, but so what happens with a property owner who has some sunken logs, just off, the lakefront, the lakeshore property, and wants to clean the bottom of that, of the lake in the immediacy of, say, their dock or something?
Mr. Chairman, I think the real issue here is you don't need a permit for that. This just disallows the commissioner from issuing a lease or to remove sunken logs or permits for the removal of sunken logs from public waters. If it's just on just off your property and you don't need a permit. If you're removing vegetation or something growing, you need a permit from DNR. But just to remove an obstruction like a log in front of your lake home or cabin, you wouldn't be required to have a permit.
But not the lakeshore if it's in the lake.
Right, Mr. Chairman, it's in the lake, but you wouldn't necessarily be required to have a permit for that. This is really getting at the whole issue of a permit or a lease from DNR to provide for that removal. This actually issue was brought up in, I think, in Division, where there was a prohibition on removing sunken logs, and that was stricken from the bill because there was some concern that there could be a confusion for somebody just removing a log that's become an obstruction to boaters.
Mr. Chair, DNR does have guidelines and rules for the removal of submergent vegetation out, and how far and how wide you can go is all they've calculated that all. So that's just something. If you have an obstruction of a sunken log, just ask the DNR for their for their guidelines on that.
Mr. Chairman.
Okay. Sarah Pappas.
Mr. Chairman, I really am not very comfortable this year with raising fees. I don't really feel like it's necessary. I don't feel like you gave a very good justification, Senator Chaudhry. So I'm unhappy with the fee section here, raising fishing fees. That's a really big jump. I mean, I didn't vote for the deputy register fee increase, and they made a much stronger case. Also on page 58, could you tell me what is section 3 on 58? I don't understand what this historic. I'm concerned about what this historic property exemption means.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Pappas, that actually has already passed the Senate, Senator Anderson's bill. This is the same provision that was in Senate File 3275, and it deals. Senator Anderson could probably address.
Well, Mr. Chairman, then maybe we don't need it if it's already passed the Senate. I took out a provision the other day that had already passed the Senate in one of my bills. So why do we need to do it duplicatively?
Mr. Chair, Senator Pappas, we normally carry the lands bill in the overall policy bill. And if this becomes law, then there is no reason to carry this in. Bill.
Mr. Chair, Senator Anderson. I guess I'd like to speak to both of the issues that Senator Pappas raised. On the Hill Annex Mine, I don't like this language, and I made that pretty clear. It is in my bill because it was in the lands bill, and basically what's happening is we've asked the DNR and the Historical Society to try to negotiate this issue out. And they apparently have been trying and have some kind of an agreement, but what I've been told is that the commissioner of the DNR won't sign it because he wants us to pass this, which would make the agreement irrelevant. I mean, the agreement would make it unnecessary to pass this exemption from the historic sighting, the historical.
What does it do?
It says that it's a historic site. The state park has a historic site, and there's on it because it's an old mine site. And this would allow the DNR to remove some taconite material without going through existing law, which requires that they go through some kind of historical society approval before they tamper with the site. And so I think it's appropriate that they work with the Historical Society. And so I've put the DNR on notice that if they don't reach an agreement, then I would intend to take this language out in the conference committee. And so I would be happy to take it out. I had whispered to Senator Pappas I wasn't happy about this language, and I guess that's why she asked the question. But
telling me.
Well, let me ask just a process question, procedural question. Article 3 is state lands. This is the Game and Fish Bill. I've participated over the years in the let's try to stick something in as many bills as possible routine, but it seems to me this year we're at times going a little bit overboard on it. So, Senator Anderson, we had your separate bill.
Correct. Well, Mr. Chairman?
Senator Pappas?
There's also, I'm just noticing, there's also Section 34, which is a land bill, is also...
Okay, yeah, I think...
This is the lands bill.
This is the lands bill that
That's
is in the Fish and Game bill?
Which is also in my bill, Mr. Chair.
Okay, so Senator Anderson and Senator Chaudhry, as chairman of the Policy Committee and the Finance Division, is there a reason we're...
Well, Mr. Chair, I put the lands bill in my omnibus bill because it had a fiscal impact on a number of the provisions. It relates to the sale of lands, and there's revenue in... that comes in from some of the provisions. So I had put it in my omnibus bill. Senator Chaudhry offered it as an amendment to his Game and Fish bill as well. So now it's in both places.
Well,
Mr. Chair, just by way of just historical background, I've for the past 4 years I've carried the lands bill in an omnibus bill that includes Game and Fish, environment policy, and the lands bill. That's what happened last year. I'm just going with what has always been done last year. If someone else wants to put the same provisions in their bill, I didn't object. That's fine. And to this particular provision, it's the first objection I've heard. This has been through land subcommittee, environment policy, environment finance, full finance, and the floor, and it's the first objection that I've heard to it. So
Mr. Chair, I've raised objections to it in numerous committees, so that's nothing new.
But it is in
my bill, and so, Mr. Chair, I understand.
I mean, some of these, certainly these kinds of conversations are not unique to this year's session. Right now I'm going through some of the Senator Bach, where I have a bill, some question whether or not we should carry it, the language in his tax bill. But that's a discussion between the two of us relative to strategy and process, and the language will not change from place to place because he and I agree on the language of this particular provision. But just hypothetically, Sir Anderson, you're saying it sounds like you. Let's take this section on the Hill Annex mine. Do we end up coming out of two separate conference committees with two different provisions?
Well, Mr. Chair, potentially, yes. There's a lot of other overlap, obviously, here, too. So there is some danger of that.
Okay.
Bill signed.
I'm not sure I've got a good answer at this point.
Mr. Chairman.
Senator Tomasoni.
I found that when you put things in several bills, it works better.
But that's if you control. If you're involved with and controlling the process of the several bills.
And Mr. Chairman, I think that this particular, the Hill Annex provision, has something to do with the SR Steel potential mining of that area. That's a new mining operation. I think the idea here is that this is closely located near where the mining operation is going to happen.
I think the difference in this instance is, I understand where we've had separate sections or particular provisions. Here we have basically a separate bill article carried in a couple of different places that has a variety of provisions. And so, Senator Shadra, you've suggested we've done this before. I don't know why it's hitting me now that it's again, it's not that we haven't carried articles in, you know, taken one article, put it into a larger omnibus bill. That happens all the time. It's not that we have provisions, as Senator Tomasoni suggests, that show up in several different places. But I'm not sure we've had how often we have major articles that have a multiplicity of sections show up in two separate omnibus bills. And if we have done that, I'm not sure that's the best process.
Mr. Chair, usually the policy policy articles and the policy omnibus bills are in omnibus bills that I've carried over the last 4 years. The House has had a different tack. They've carried a lot of policy in their finance bills, but for the most part, in the Senate, the omnibus finance bills have been separate from the omnibus policy bills. And I have this is what I'm presenting today is in line with precisely what we've done in the past. We've had a policy article, we've had a lands article, we've had a game and fish article. And I don't recall a time when the lands bill has ever been in our environment finance bills.
Mr. Chair,
Harrison.
The reason I put it in this bill is, you know, basically I follow the advice of staff, and I'm not trying to blame them. I just thought it was useful. It was good advice that it had fiscal, what they looked at things that had fiscal impacts, and that's what we look to put into our finance bills. I mean, Senator Chaudhry is absolutely right. We try to separate out the policy provisions and the finance provisions, and Senator Chaudhry carries the policy bill, but obviously, we have to make some judgments. Some things are contain both policy and finance. And so, and I checked with Senator Scogin, who was the original author of the lands bill, and he was very supportive of putting it in my omnibus bill. And so that's, for both of those reasons, I thought it should be in my omnibus bill. It has some small fiscal impacts.
And is Senator Scogin on both the policy committee and the division?
He's not on, he's on the
policy, not on
policy
either.
Committee.
Well, I know we've had some jurisdictional.
He was the author of the original lands bill.
And I know we've had some jurisdictional differences between the policy committee and the finance division in this particular instance. But I'm not sure at this late date in the session I have a resolution, but maybe next year we should try to resolve some of this at the front end. Might be a way to operate. Senator Foley?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. What we're doing is spending an awful lot of time on something that really isn't germane to this and ought to be dealt with in other ways. So I would suggest that we move on and come back at a future date and time to deal with the issues that you're talking about. I mean, last week, my good friend Senator Murphy had a couple of bills in there, and when he, when I got to hear the bills, I found a bill that went through a whole series of committees, but it didn't go through any that I was involved in, and it was one of those that should have been, and it's a situation that I'd like to have you move this forward and then grant the different means of solving this.
Well, that's why I suggested Senator Foley. And
well, but you're the chairman, Mr. Chair, and I would suggest that you say, let's go.
Oh, yeah, right.
Thanks. Okay.
If you want me to move along.
If it was always that simple. Senator Pariseau, Senator Foley would like
to me that the your caucus ought to handle this by the organization of who's in charge of what as they get their chairs and their responsibilities instead of waiting till the end of this session here and trying to decide who the heck has charge of what in a bill that's before us after going many ways.
Okay, that's kind of a follow-up to Senator Foley.
You are in charge of the place, I forget to tell you. Should I say it again?
Yeah, keep on reminding me.
Well, Mr. Chairman,
Chair
Murphy.
In, In all fairness, you're only in charge of this right here. I think the overall, what Senator Parisot is talking about is the overall bill flow, and I have noticed that there's differences. It could probably use a little tightening up. So.
Well, maybe next year.
That's not my deal.
I was going to say you and Senator Parisot could come back and maybe be kind of an, you know, ad hoc advisory committee to us.
Supposed to be a team?
Well, yeah.
Mr. Chairman.
Well, we got a common county line. I know that.
He's wearing a pink. Senator Pappas.
Well, Mr. Chairman, as I thumb through the bill, and this is not Senator Anderson whispering in my ear. This is me looking at the bill myself. I'm also finding on page 20, section 39, that there are non-resident fishing fees that are also going up.
Everything's
so,
going along up. With
the so there's fees. More fees in here, Senator Chaudhry, than you led me to believe. And also, I don't understand. I mean, I always carry fees in my funding bill. Because then maybe that's why this policy bill is here in finance, because there are all these fiscal impacts in the bill, including more fee increases.
Well, to be fair, Senator Pappas, I mean, Senator Chaudhry made reference to other fees, and I asked some questions about the other fees. But certainly, you know, in your instance, as is the case with Senator Murphy,
16,
we have this kind of combined policy and finance 18. Committee, which is not true with environment. That's what 20. Senator Parisot is making reference to.
Yeah.
But to follow Senator Foley's admonition, is there further discussion or amendments? I think, Senator Chaudhry, you said there's a technical amendment. Is that correct?
There's a technical amendment, the A21.
Why don't we start with that and then...
Mr. Chair, while it's being passed out, just a couple of comments. Senator Pappas, when I described to you the situation of you going to a gas station buying a fishing license, I was giving an example of what would happen to a person such as yourself. So if it was confusing that it didn't include non-resident fees, that I didn't mention it, sorry. But we did also refer to the fee schedule in this, and it is a part of balancing. That is a part of balancing the Game and Fish Fund.
Sure.
The other point I would just like to make is that this bill was brought to me by angling groups who discussed this issue at length, at the annual DNR roundtable conference and decided to bring this to me. I think it was at least five or six angling groups, Anglers for Habitat, Bass Federation, Dark House Association, Muskies Inc. Anglers for Habitat is an umbrella anglers group. They all testified in favor of it. There was no testimony opposing this fee increase. The DNR, although it doesn't like the fee increase, only kind of provided cautionary testimony, but it did not testify in opposition to it. In fact, some of the testimony was compelling as to the need in the fisheries department for this. And this is passed unanimously from the policy committee. It's passed unanimously in the Environment Finance Committee, and now it's here before you. So I think I should also add that the Citizens Oversight Committee, Budget Oversight Committee of the Game and Fish Fund, has been recommending that the fishing license fee be increased for the last decade. It has not been raised in a decade. It has put that recommendation in writing in its annual reports on two occasions in the last, I think, 5 to 7 years. And in the report that the DNR, that the legislature mandated, asking the DNR how to solve the Game and Fish Fund imbalance, the DNR itself recommended a fishing fee increase. So and this increase only goes into effect next year. So I don't know if we're ever going to find a critical mass as in favor of doing this as we have this year. And I think it's got to get done, and we have to do it this year for the sake of the Game and Fish Fund, because it's set to go into the red between around 2012 and 2013. If this goes into effect in 2011,
we will have, because of the fiscal cycle, we will only gain half of our revenues of that increase in the first year in 2011. We aren't going to see that, the full increase of the revenues, until 2012. That is butting right up against where this Game and Fish Fund is going into the red, and we need to do that. We just, I don't want to pay more. I'm an angler. I don't want to pay more. But to be honest with you, the way we've structured this bill, it is an excellent balance of stabilizing the Game and Fish Fund, balance itself, balancing, correcting the imbalance between fisheries and wildlife. And actually, if you have 16 and 17-year-olds, you're going to pay less under this bill, because you're no longer going to have to pay for them. And we're going to get more kids into fishing. So, I mean, I think we've really struck a really sweet spot here in doing this. And it's a good bill, and we need to pass it.
Senator Anderson.
Well, Mr. Chair, I'm not disagreeing with what Senator Chaudhry is saying, but some of us, especially me, raised some questions about whether we should do this year. I completely agree we need to raise the fees, the fishing license fees. It needs to be done fairly soon to keep the fund solvent. But I personally would prefer to wait a year just because of the economy. So I just want to say that for the record. It did pass our committee with very strong support, but I think there's a little bit of concern about the timing. But all of the interest groups have come out in support of doing this now. So I just want to raise that. If we waited a year, I think we'd still be able to protect the fund. The fee increase, the first one, would take effect next winter. So if we waited a year to do this, we'd have to wait another season, essentially.
And I suppose it would be difficult to determine, but is any of the diminishment of the Game and Fish recession-driven? So if you're raising fees,
I don't know.
It's annoying. It's a good question.
I suppose that would be difficult to quantify. But
I apologize. What is the question?
Is any diminishment in the Game and Fish Fund recession-driven? That people aren't, buying fishing licenses because they're saving money wherever they can?
Mr. Chair, I guess we don't know, but I think there's an opposite school of thought that because of the recession, people are doing less expensive things, such as fishing.
Sarah Mitzen.
I just wanted to piggyback on what you're talking about, Mr. Chairman, about the recession, and that the fees aren't needed from the author's testimony till at least 12 and maybe the year 13. And what's the big rush when people don't have any discretionary money? And you're not missing anybody. I mean, you got fishing, you've got hunting. Page 16, I would have the committee members look at page 16, 17, 18, 19, 20, 21. Everything is getting hit. And it's not a little bit. It's $5, $6 or $3 or what have you. The times are tough out there. And it seems to me we can wait a year on these. Take a look, members, at 16, 17, 18, 19, and 20. And I don't know, these. When you're going $5, $6, $10, that's a lot of money to a lot of people. And it's not needed at this point.
Mr. Chair.
So why can't we wait a year or two?
Mr. Chair, the hunting fees are going down.
Well, it doesn't look like it.
Mr. Chair, maybe we need to have Mr. Mueller come back and explain this.
I'm sorry, I was a little late. I had another meeting this morning, but I.
Well, yeah, that's Mr. Mueller can.
That's the one out of 12 that goes down, probably. Huh?
No, Mr. Chair, no. We are.
So, Chairman, how much does
decreasing,
this raise?
We are decreasing fees in a number of areas, particularly for kids. And we're eliminating the fishing license for 16 and 17 year olds. Might I also add that this doesn't go into effect until a year from now?
Well, Mr. Chairman, just one last remark. When I see $37 to 42, I see $38.50 to 43, I see $23 to 26, I see $32 to 37. These are increases. Small game goes from 17 to 21. And to say that they're going down, I'm missing something here. So that's enough.
Mr. Chair, maybe we need to have Mr. Mueller come here and explain this. That's not correct. Small game is not going from 17 to 21 under this.
Mr. Mueller, did you want to?
Well, what's in writing then, Mr. Chairman? Okay.
All right, Mr. Mueller.
Mr. Chairman and Senator Metzen, and there are a number of different things going on right here. That maybe looking at the fiscal note will also help describe some of the changes that are happening. There's basically three things happening with the youth simplification of hunting licenses are mostly a decrease in costs. And this was a proposal brought by the DNR trying to simplify the way the youth hunting licenses are issued. And that is on page 4 of the fiscal note. And that is actually showing a loss of revenue, but also increasing the amount of license sold. They're trying to get more kids to buy hunting licenses, but at a lower cost. The second major thing that's happening is on the next page of the fiscal note, page 5, is where we are no longer requiring fishing licenses for 16 and 17-year-olds. So that's a loss of revenue also. The only increases that are happening are for fishing licenses for everyone 18 and above, for residents and non-residents. Some of the other changes that you may be seeing in the language are there's a various combo licenses and things like that that are sold for hunting and fishing license combos, and some of that you may be seeing in the language where we've adjusted the fee just to add the fishing license increase to that. But none of the hunting licenses, are going up.
Although, to be fair, Mr. Miller, it's not revenue neutral.
No.
On balance, more money is raised. It's not right. Dollar-for-dollar trade-off.
Mr. Chairman, members, if you look at the either at the front page of the fiscal note or the one pager that I've handed out, you'll see under revenues, there are a lot of negatives on there because we're losing revenue for increasing the age for fishing license.
Thank you.
We're getting new revenue for fishing licenses, but we're losing revenue again for simplified the youth hunting fees. So we're losing, it is a net increase, but to do some of the other simplification and increasing the age, you have to get some more revenue also to get in to go into the fund.
Senator Dill.
Well, Mr. Chairman, members, I was just sitting here listening carefully, and I heard Senator Chaudhary talk about how he didn't want to pay more. I guess nobody wants to pay more, but I feel like I want to pay my fair share. And I'm interested enough in wildlife and fishing and so forth to feel like I really want to pay my fair share. And I do support what Senator Chaudhary has in his bill here because it does make some adjustments so that I do pay more of my fair share. And he's already explained how there's an imbalance between those that are buying hunting licenses and fishing licenses. And this bill does bring things back into a better balance between those two. And so I would urge us to support what Senator Chaudhary has in his bill.
Mr. Chairman?
Pappas.
I guess I'm concerned that we also passed the legacy amendment, which is taxing everyone around the state to invest in wildlife and hunting and fishing lands. And so why do we need to also raise the fees? I mean, I can see we're not cutting anything, so we're not lowering any fees. You're lowering for youth. I understand that. But I don't see why. I just don't think this is a good year to do these huge fee increases. If you wanted to, phase in the youth thing and have kind of a counterbalance, that would be a simple thing to do. But this is a fairly complicated proposal with primarily increases. Occasionally there is a decrease. I see that. But it looks to me like it's primarily increases and substantial ones.
Mr. Chair, the anglers don't see $5 as a substantial increase. They've asked for this. This is a stakeholder-driven proposal. The other point that I would make is that we are cutting in our fisheries divisions. The amendment is reserved for activities that preserve, protect, and enhance primarily habitat, wildlife, on-the-ground type activities. They do not cover things such as the Minocqua program, which is a DNR program that was had youth basically put on youth fishing camps, taught kids how to fish. We can't use the legacy money for that. We can't use the legacy money for stocking, for example. We can't use legacy money for fisheries staff. So all of those things are outside of the purview of the legacy amendment. I should also add that the Wildlife Division of the DNR no longer has any general fund money. It has been cut. It is, in fact, it's been to the cut to the point where it's been eliminated. There's no longer any general fund money that funds the Wildlife Division. It is all game and fish money. So yes, we have been cutting, and this is not only a pretty modest increase, but it also reduces fees and is moving our programming forward. So we've struck a really important balance here, and the most important part of it is that it's coming from the users. They see the need. They see what's happening with the programming.
Okay. Well, we've had distributed the A21 amendment, which is the technical amendment.
Mr. Chair, I wanted to add one more thing. One more thing. I forgot to mention, for those of you who are concerned about the paying an extra $5, Minnesota is unique. We have a conservation license that you can purchase where you pay two-thirds of the price of a license. So you can buy that too. And you only have to keep half of the fish that you're normally allowed to. Last year, we also made fishing free in all state parks. So there is also that option. So you're probably going to save money under... First of all, this bill doesn't go into effect until a year from now. Secondly, you can fish for free in a state park right now. Thirdly, if you have kids, you're going to be saving, if 16 and 17-year-olds, you're no longer going to be paying anything, so your cost is going to be going down. And we're keeping the Game and Fish Fund solvent, and we are balancing the fish and wildlife imbalance. And so I think we're doing some really great work in this bill.
Mr. Chairman.
Senator Foley.
We keep plowing the same field, and it just is not the way to do business. I mean, what is the governor going to do on this? Is it we're just wasting our time when he turns and line item veto this?
Can't line item veto it. Senator Foley, I understand the comment you made a few minutes ago about my questions about the process, but obviously the fees are clearly a direct finance issue in this committee. Mm-hmm. Again, as I mentioned, we've got the A21 amendment, which appears to be, and we should make sure we know what this is. Senator Chaudhry?
Mr. Chairman, the A21 amendment is a technical amendment. There are two places where the hunting fee for youth should have been reduced from $13 to $5. And so the fiscal note actually already reflects this. This was just purely technical to make sure that all the fees line. This is a reduction in the youth hunting license fees.
Okay. Does anybody wish to move the amendment, Senator Foley? If you'd like to move the technical amendment. On that motion, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carries. Okay, further discussion on the bill. Amendments? Motions?
Mr. Chairman, you need a motion?
I do.
I'll make the motion.
All right. Senator Murphy moves that Senate File 2900, as amended, be recommended to pass. Is there further discussion on that motion? If not, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed?
No.
No.
Motion carries. Thank you, Senator Chaudhry.
Mr. Chair, members.
Okay. Then once more, we're going to conclude with a big finish with Senator Betzold.
Oh, man.
Senator Betzold on House File 2899 moves adoption of the division report.
Chair,
I'm sorry.
Can
technically, it's a House file, so do I have to move the Senate language plus the division report to make it work?
Mr. Watson.
Mr. Chairman, with this bill, we might want to move forward with the Senate language, and when we're done with it, then move to amend the Senate language as amended into the House file.
Okay. All right, so let's take up...
I'll move the division report, Mr. Chair.
Let's take up Senate file 2354. Senator Betzel moves the division report. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed. Motion carries.
Mr.
Senator Betzel.
Chair, just so I don't forget, I'd like to move the amended Senate language into House File 2899.
Okay, then on that motion, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed. Motion carries. So now we have in front of us House File 2899 as amended.
Yeah, Mr. Chair, members, House File 2899 deals with the Data Practices Act, and right now, well, since its inception, if an aggrieved party wants to challenge a government entity withholding or improperly classifying data that somebody believes ought to be disclosed, their only remedy is to go to court. And that can be quite expensive for a citizen, even for the news media, to do so. What this provides is an alternative remedy. You can still go to court if you choose to do so. Under this bill, you would also have the opportunity to bring an action before the Office of Administrative Hearings. The issue that comes before the Finance Committee is the fact that there would be a filing fee that the party would have to file, and part of that fee would be used to pay the Office of Administrative Hearings. That's where the fiscal note is generated, but it pays for itself because they would be it's a $1,000 filing fee, which you can see on page 3, line 21 of the second engrossment. It's a $1,000 filing fee. However, after the process is completed, if you go to page 6, line 19, the office can refund the filing fee less $50 and the costs of the hearing not to exceed the $1,000 filing fee. So that's really the issue that comes before us. The bill basically sets forth the procedures under which petition can be filed, when it can be dismissed. There's attorney's fees that can be awarded, but that, as I say, the filing fee is the real issue that comes before this this committee. And as I say, most of the filing fee is going to be returned, but some of it's going to be retained by the Office of Administrative Hearings in order to pay for the hearing costs. So that is the fiscal impact of this bill. I can certainly go into further detail, but that's the issue before this committee.
Just briefly, what else does the bill do?
Well, as I say, it simply sets forth an alternative means to bring forward a complaint. Instead of going to court, you go to the Office of Administrative Hearings, and it sets forth a process by which the complaint is initially reviewed by the Office of Administrative Hearings. If it's groundless, it can be dismissed at the onset. If the petition seems to have merit, then a hearing will be scheduled. The prevailing party can receive attorney's fees not to exceed $5,000, page 6, line 11. However, if it's frivolous, then the matter can be dismissed, page 6, line 24, and the complainant can be made to pay the respondent's reasonable attorney's fees not to exceed $5,000. And the complainant would not be entitled to a refund of the filing fee if it's a frivolous matter. So, as I say, one issue that's more policy related that is coming up. It's beyond the purview of this committee, and the fact that the Senate language specifically exempts requests for educational data. That was just part of a negotiation and putting the bill together, and that's been some of a policy issue that some people have some concerns about, but as I said, that goes beyond the purview of this committee.
And what about the section on probable cause review? Is that in effect, a mandatory summary judgment motion?
Well, if the chief administrative officer is going to be reviewing the petition when it's filed, and if on the face of it it has no merit, it can be dismissed. Then there's a process for challenging the chief administrative officer's decision. On the other hand, if a petition does seem to have merit, then the process will go forward, and there's going to be a hearing scheduled. So there's just a way to kind of weed out the petitions that are filed to find out which ones have merit, which ones do not. But then there's still a process to challenge the decision if the
somebody, if a party feels aggrieved by the decision.
Okay. Do we have further questions on the bill?
Good bill.
Discussion, amendments?
If there's, I don't know if there's anybody who, Bruce Johnson from the office is here also to testify if there's any questions on the fiscal impact, but if there are no questions, then I would move the Senate file 2354, House file 2899, as amended. House file 2899 be recommended to pass.
And on the motion, if there's no further discussion, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? Motion carries.
And Mr. Chair, the other bill is Senate file 2186. Apparently it has no fiscal impact. I'll briefly describe it. This just deals with defining what the county of financial responsibility is in civil commitment. There's many situations where a patient is committed out of one county but placed in another county. And when the petition, the commitment ends and a new petition is started, sometimes there's disputes between the counties as to who's now responsible. Does the party actually move? There's issues. This is current law, but there's inconsistent terms have been used, and it isn't always clear just how to resolve the differences. Ultimately, the answer is the Department of Human Services is the tiebreaker. If the parties can't figure it out, they do. But apparently it has no fiscal impact to the state. Senator Berglund reviewed the bill and determined that it did not need to go through the Human Services Budget Division. And so, as I say, there is no really fiscal impact. It was just kind of clarifying what is currently existing law, trying to figure out what which party pays when you're getting these disputes between two different counties on civil commitment venues.
So, Senator Bentzel, did this language come from Department of Human Services or from the counties?
It actually came from the counties. There have been a number of disputes over the years, and I think Human Services has reviewed it and believe that these are necessary changes to it, but it initiated because the counties, you know, can't always agree among themselves, you know, who ultimately pays, even though, as I say, it's current law, but there are just enough questions in how current law is worded that they wanted to have some, you know, the language is before us and how to determine, you know, who pays when you have these disputes between the two counties.
And you and I are the two people who have done this kind of work, so we have some sense of it.
And Mr. Senator Chairman, the default county is Ramsey, right?
Usually Hennepin.
Oh, Hennepin. Okay. As long as it's not Goodhue.
There are. I had a case once.
For Dakota.
Yeah, there are situations where Brown County wants you to put a very psychotic person on a bus and send them to Hennepin Avenue. I mean, those things
they
happen.
Do.
Yes.
Sarah Higgins, did you?
Sorry, Mr. Chair. And they do.
And they do.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Further discussion?
My constituents get
Mr. Chair, I'll move the Senate File 2186 be recommended to pass.
Before you finish, Senator Higgins is muttering. And
I was muttering.
Was there something you...
I understood it. I heard the muttering.
Was just muttering.
Okay. Putting that aside, then Senator Bentzel moves that Senate File 2186 be recommended to pass. If there's no further discussion, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
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 Opposed. Motion carries. And that concludes the agenda. We meet, I think, next Wednesday.
Pensions.